Okay, welcome everybody. We start our spring meeting. 5 degrees outside, but warm inside. And we're going to discuss the disclosure initiative. Give the floor to Catherine.
Thank you, Hans. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. So we are here to ask the board to make decisions about project next steps on the principles of disclosure. We've got a number of questions to ask the board today, but before getting into those, I wanted to briefly highlight a couple of overview points about our approach. So as we discussed last month, we've had a lot of feedback about the importance of clear project direction and focus. So in light of that feedback, our recommendations today are based on an assessment of the relative priority of all of the topics that were considered in the discussion paper. We acknowledge that all of those topics would be of help to some stakeholders if they were further developed. However, in light of the feedback we've heard, we think it's important to identify the activities the board could undertake that would make the most difference to the disclosure problem and to narrow the focus of the project accordingly. So with that context in mind, I'd like to highlight a couple of paragraphs in today's papers that bring together the big picture across all of our staff recommendations. So first, paragraph 8 of Agenda Paper 11A summarises our categorisation of all the topics that were considered in the discussion paper by relative priority. That table forms the basis of our recommendations, and it's worth keeping that big picture in mind as we work through the individual questions. I'd also like to highlight paragraph 3 in the cover paper, which provides an indicative summary of our plans for moving all elements of the disclosure initiative forward if the board were to agree with all of the staff recommendations today. Finally, just to note that in the week before posting these papers, we discussed project next steps with both the CMAC and the GPF advisory groups, and similar to all of our other stakeholders, those groups did express some mixed views, but just to confirm to the board that the various comments and suggestions we received were part of our considerations in developing today's requirements, recommendations, should I say. I'm jumping ahead slightly. So before I tee up the first question for the board, I will just pause in case there are any overview comments or questions before getting into the detail. Okay, wonderful. In that case, we will move on to Agenda Paper 11A. We'll be focusing on this for the first part of the meeting. We're going to work through the questions for the board in the order that they appear in the papers. So with reference to that categorisation in paragraph 8, we're going to start with Category 1 and work our way through to Category 5. So Category 1 contains four topics that, for the reasons described in paragraphs 9 to 17, we think are more relevant to the Primary Financial Statements project. These topics are the roles of the Primary Financial Statements and the notes, presentation of EBIT and EBITDA, presentation of unusual and infrequently occurring items, and the fair presentation of performance measures. So we're recommending that the board does not consider those topics further within the principles of disclosure project, but instead considers the feedback received as part of its work on the primary financial statements. For the avoidance of any possible doubt, we have discussed this with our colleagues in the primary financial statements team. So question 1 for the board on page 6 is whether you agree with that staff recommendation. We'll hand over for discussion of question 1.
Sure.
I agree with your recommendations, but just a couple of observations. Firstly, I would have thought that we'd at least have to have in mind what we think the role of the notes is if we're going to do the work on thinking about how to craft/draft disclosure objectives and things like that. So I would have thought that there's at least a little some relevance to that. And so that was just one thought. Not that I disagree with sort of if you're going to do a formal development that it should be in the context of PFS, but surely we need to think about that. And the other thing is just an observation. Lots of people have been quite critical about, you know, how the principles of disclosure discussion paper was quite a hodgepodge of things and lots of interrelationships with different projects, which I think is fair. But I think we just need to be careful not to sort of overdo the extent to which that is news to us. So I think it's important, the paragraph 15, where we note that the board flagged the fact that we were going to think about these things in the context of the PFS. So it's not like, oh my God, we've got news from the market and therefore we're making this approach. It's more a confirmation of that approach, which I just think might help slightly with the messaging.
Any other comments? So I assume we agree with this recommendation. I certainly do. Yes.
14.
By the way, I thought the table in paragraph 8 was very handy.
Okay, moving on to category 2 then, which is discussed in paragraphs 18 to 36. Here we have 4 topics that we think are unlikely to contribute significantly to addressing the disclosure problem. Now, whilst we think further developing these topics would be of help to some stakeholders, we think there are other activities that the board could undertake that would be more beneficial. 3 of these topics are the use of formatting in the financial statements, the location of accounting policy disclosures, and the location of disclosure objectives and requirements in IFRS standards. So question 2 on page 10 asks whether the board agrees with the staff recommendation not to pursue those topics further. The 4th topic in this category relates to clarifying the use of the terms present and disclose in IFRS standards. In this case, we recommend that the board does not further pursue this as an individual activity, but instead considers the feedback received in the context of broader considerations about how the board develops and drafts disclosure requirements. So question 3 then asks whether you agree with that recommendation. So I'll hand over for discussion on questions 2 and 3.
Amaro, is this one of the cases in Portuguese where present and disclose are the same word? Or?
Yeah.
Answers the question. Mary.
I think a small point. Paragraph 23, I agree with the staff recommendation about not developing further guidance to use of formatting, but I do think it's something that the board should ask itself in each project, do we want to specify any formatting or not? I can think of a couple of times in other projects when we have considered, in some cases, said yes, in some cases, said no to, for example, requiring a tabular form presentation of data. And I think it's something I agree with not going through all the standards and trying to do overarching guidance on formatting, but I think it's something we should ask ourselves each time.
Well, and also keeping in mind that we might develop non-mandatory formatting for industry-specific formats.
I would
think this is more general guidance, and
I agree that
is not very.
And I think we're talking about that formatting more for the face of the statement of performance, yeah. And I'm talking about, for example, notes.
Yeah. Jen Chow.
Thank you, Hans. Generally, I agree with the staff's recommendation. Some points similar with Mary, and just some clarification. The question asked that persuade further to developing and develop non-mandatory guidance about the use of formatting in financial statements. So whether developing mandatory guidance allowed or not, it's not clear. And the second, the relationship with existing standards and currently active research projects of primary financial statement, because existing standard IS1 and IS7, we do provide some guidance of the format of the financial statement. And also, primary financial statement currently our existing project, actually we are also developing some guidance on subtotals, line items, so this kind of format. So I would like to clarify, the relationship between this notion and with existing standards and with our active research projects of primary financial statements, because this is a general guidance, we're guiding other standard settings, so which kind of relationship, yeah.
Just to clarify on those things, your first question about whether it will be mandatory or non-mandatory, apologies if it wasn't clear in the paper. So we were referring to the type of guidance that was discussed in the DP, and the question that was asked was specific to non-mandatory guidance. So I know we've said it differently in two places in the paper. It is referring to the non-mandatory guidance that was asked about in the DP. And with regard to primary financial statements, again, the what we are proposing not to move forward is the general non-mandatory guidance that was discussed in the POD discussion paper. We're not sort of passing any view, staff recommendation or anything about what's happening in primary financial statements. All we're recommending is that the discussions that were in the POD DP are not moved forward further.
I think, just to confirm one thing which I think Jing Chao is asking in addition, which I think is a fair question, is if we agree with your recommendations here, that would mean we wouldn't be developing any guidance, non-mandatory or mandatory, about formatting or location of policies, would we? You've just expressed it this way because it's directly what was in the DP, but as yes. a result of this, we wouldn't be doing work on guidance full stop on these particular topics, would we?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand the question.
So if we vote with your recommendations,
yep.
it might mean to some that it means that we're not developing non-mandatory guidance about formatting, but we are developing mandatory guidance.
Okay.
You just mean really guidance. Yes, stop, I mean, don't you?
Yes, yes.
We mean mandatory or non-mandatory.
Yep. Yes, it might be worth making sure our staff update reflects that. Yeah, so the wording was that in the DP, but we will make clear that it is guidance full stop. Thank you.
Okay, do we agree with the staff's recommendation?
Is that question two?
Yes.
14.
Two and three.
Question three.
14. Okay, wonderful. Next up then is category three, which is discussed in paragraphs 37 to 46. Now, this category contains two discussion paper topics that we think can be dealt with separately from the main disclosure problem and that we think need some further analysis before the board decides how to move forward. So the first of those two topics is about the location of information, i.e. whether the board should develop guidance or requirements relating to IFRS information outside the financial statements and non-IFRS information inside the financial statements. Here we heard a strong message of support from respondents, but they also had many concerns. Now, in order to decide whether and how best to move forward with this topic, we think that more specific information about those concerns and about whether and how the board could effectively address them is needed. So consequently, we recommend that the staff perform further analysis described in paragraph 42 before bringing this topic back to the board. The second topic in category three relates to whether the board should develop guidance or requirements to help companies determine which accounting policies to disclose. Respondents supported the board developing guidance, but they were less supportive of the particular approach that was described in the discussion paper. The most prevalent alternative suggestion was to focus any guidance on whether or not an accounting policy is considered to be material. So the further analysis we're proposing here would involve considering the potential effect on accounting policy disclosures of recent board publications relating to materiality and considering whether there are alternative approaches to developing guidance to that proposed in the discussion paper for the board to consider. So question four on page 13 essentially asks the board whether it agrees that the staff should perform the described further analysis and subsequently bring a more informed recommendation about next steps on these two topics. So I will hand over for discussion of question four.
Yeah, thank you. And I agree with your recommendations. I thought both papers were very, very well written, articulating where the staff's mind is. Should have asked earlier when you said you talked to the primary financial statement alter egos, do they agree with taking it? We never did say that, just that you talked to them. But don't answer. I do think on with respect to the location information, I think this one's, particularly if we want to start minimizing redundancy, because when in doubt you put stuff in the management commentary and the footnotes and maybe strategic report or other things as well. So I think this is important if we're trying to if redundancy is one of the factors, you know, making readability less utilitarian. I think that's really important. The other thing, though, I think you probably, as part of your, you should talk to the IAASB, because something that should be audited that's in the management commentary, or vice versa, you know, we're going to need, in particular, we should target outreach, you know, to the audit standard setters, as well as what their thoughts are and what they can live with, or what they might be able to live with if they change something.
Amaru?
Thanks, Hans. This is aligned with Gary. My question is much more a clarification. Sorry. You mentioned paragraph 40 that, and you make a strong case that, in particular, respondents thought the board should liaise with other parties, national standard setters, and you mentioned specifically IAASB. So I was assuming this is one of the liaison process in the one of the parties that we are going to. But in paragraph 42, I didn't have this that clear, because in A, we suggest perform some limited outreach with respondents. So when I read this first sentence, I said, well, this is only with respondents who provided feedback on the location. And then you give an example following. And when you mention in the example some of the national standard setters, so I was confused. Are we going to liaise with all who commented on this particular subject, including IAASB, or?
Yes. So to clarify, the purpose of the outreach really is to do with this issue about potential jurisdictional concerns. So the parties that most raised that were standard setters and regulators, and they obviously have that jurisdictional knowledge. The IAASB did provide feedback on this area, and we do intend for them to be part of that outreach. In terms of standard setters and regulators, we are, assuming the board go with this recommendation, planning to talk to a wide range of standard setters through the upcoming ASAF meeting next month on this topic. And we also plan to contact all of the regulators that commented, which was just about all of
it. It's a little bit more expanded than what is in here.
Yes.
Thank you, Hans. First of all, I agree with staff's recommendation. I have one concern about which accounting policy should be disclosed. And I agree with staff's recommendation. We need to perform the further analysis to see the potential effect of accounting policy disclosure of our recent publication, those recent publications which relate to the application of materiality. But I think this question is relevant to the question seven. I think it's better, my concern about the timing, because you are going to bring this issue back in June for the meeting. But I think it's better to wait 1 or 2 years after our materiality practice statement has been applied at least 2 years, and to look at the impact, whether the people have been aware, you know, which accounting policy should be disclosed or not, based on their understanding, based on their judgment of the materiality. So I think it's better to move this issue together with question seven. I agree with the recommendation, just, you know, the timing seems that quite limited. I cannot say that only 2 or 3 months we can see, several months we can see the potential impact or potential effect. We can get the full message with regard to this topic. So this is my recommendation.
I think that's a fair challenge, and certainly if all the board members felt similarly, delaying that would be fine from our perspective. It might be helpful to clarify what we would envisage being in that paper that we're proposing. So we think the link with materiality here is a little bit more specific than what's in question seven, in the sense that what we would want to do is assess if the board were going to develop guidance based on what a lot of respondents have said, i.e. based on materiality, would it be the case that that would just be information that since publishing the DP, the board has actually already given in another format and therefore just repetition. So we think there's a slightly more specific question to be considered that we could bring back sooner than the question 7 proposal. But if all board members would be more comfortable waiting, then so be it.
Anne?
I agree with the proposals. A couple of comments. In relation to 4A, you talk about the outreach and going to regulators. I think the digitisation, the IT, has got an element in this as well. So I know you're thinking about the regulators and the regulatory jurisdiction, but part of this question is the inside-outside. Where do things get produced and kept and maintained? So I think you need to think about the technology in that one as well. In relation to the second question, 4B, a bit of that is also inside-outside, because some of the discussions have been about can accounting policies be on websites as static, that sort of thing. So that's there. And it also made me think about IAS 8, because we've got active considerations in IAS 8 about what accounting policies are and accounting estimates. So I think that you need to think about that in terms of 4B.
Thank you.
Thank you. I agree with the step to recommendation. Some clarification up there of the first one, the inside outside of finance. This issue might be related to primary finance statement project too, partially, I guess. They are maybe interrelated, but what you are suggesting here, you are going to some limited outreach on the risks and costs of this inside outside of financial statement with other local, regulatory, things. So that might, if you got some good outreach, then that might help the PFS team too, because it's the same issue. So please share with that knowledge. That's very nice. And also there, after your this limited outreach, then you are going to suggest some recommendation based on that outreach. It might become a kind of a putting this project into a PFS project. That's another alternative you might think after this limited outreach, right?
To be honest, at the moment, that wasn't something we had envisaged. What we are at this point envisaging bringing back to the board in June is further information about all of the concerns that respondents had and whether we feel it would be possible to adequately address those concerns so that developing guidance would be more useful than potentially harmful. We do think that is a quite specific topic that was in the pod DP, and at this point we weren't intending to be thinking about moving that to PFS, but it's certainly something we can think about if the board members think it's relevant.
Right. Okay, can I see, I think we can answer questions A and B together. Who supports the staff recommendation?
Okay, moving on then to category 4. So this category contains 3 topics that were not addressed in the discussion paper, but that received significant feedback from respondents. Now, these topics are all quite individual, so we think it's perhaps worth talking about each one of them separately. So we'll start with the first of the 3 topics, which is interaction with other board projects. And this one is addressed in paragraphs 49 to 51. Respondents raised concerns about the relationship between the principles of disclosure project and other projects. And in light of that feedback, we think it would be helpful for the staff to prepare a summary of the distinction and boundaries between those projects, or in particular, the various better communication projects, for the board to discuss at a future meeting. At that meeting, we would ask the board to consider whether it was happy with that interaction or whether it would like to make changes. And we think having that discussion would also be helpful in providing clarity to stakeholders and would also help to alleviate their concerns about potential overlap. So question 5 on page 15 asks the board whether it agrees with that recommendation. So I'll pause for discussion on question 5.
Won't there be already a lot more clarity after the decisions that we have taken?
I would hope so. I think we have received quite a strong message in this regard. So if coming out of today all of the board members are absolutely comfortable and don't feel there's anything to discuss, then it may well be the stakeholders.
Well, it might be still be useful to bring everything
in terms of
together in a short paper. Yeah. Doc?
Yes, I agree with the staff's recommendation, but explaining the interaction between project in itself is not really productive because it doesn't create anything value to the standard itself. So, of course, we need to do that, and I support it. So, as Hans pointed out, we shouldn't spend a lot of resources only for explaining each project all about.
Jen Chao.
Thank you, Hans. I fully agree we need some kind of high-level summary or maybe high-level guidance with regard to the interaction between those better communication projects. I have two recommendations whether this summary or guidance could address. One is that can we clarify the relationship between the better communication projects, those active projects we're doing now, with existing IS-1 and IS-7, because sometimes we discuss primary financial statement, we always come back to look at those paragraphs, IS-1, and those requirements, IS-7. So I think we should clarify, those relationship, and some people, whether we should replace IS-1 or not, something like that. So I think we should, at this moment, we should think about the relationship with IS-1 and IS-7 and the better communication project. Secondly, I think we are also currently we issued materiality practice statement last year. We have revised the definition of materiality, I think, and also we are now undertaking management commentary. I think these three projects also relevant to the meta communication project. For example, we mentioned the maturity, and also sometimes we discuss the management performance measures. And people will say, okay, whether they should be disclosed included in the management commentary, or whether it should be included in the primary financial statement. So I think this kind of high level guidance or high level summary is really needed, very, very necessary to guide us, the future standard setting process.
Okay. Do we agree with the staff's recommendation?
14.
Okay, then. The second topic in Category 4 relates to the effect of technology and digital reporting, and this is addressed in paragraphs 52 to 55. Many respondents thought this should be included within the scope of the project. However, we think that potential issues relating to digital reporting are much broader than just this individual project, and we're also aware that a dedicated team is being formed to develop a broader strategy in this area for the organisation. Now, the development of that team and that strategy are at a very early stage, so whilst it might be the case that digital reporting issues highlighted by respondents would be better considered as part of that broader initiative, we think it's too early to make that call now. In addition, we plan to discuss the feedback we've had here with the IFRS Taxonomy Consultative Group next month, who we think will have some useful feedback for the board. So in light of all of that, we are recommending that the board come back to this issue at a later date when we've made some progress with both of those two things, and the board will be in a better position to decide how best to respond to and manage the feedback we've heard in this area. So question 6 on page 17 of the paper essentially asks the board whether it agrees with bringing this back when we have that further information.
Mary?
I agree with the recommendation, but reading this, and it made me think about it and think about the feedback I've heard, partly this project and partly more general consultation. And I'd like to ask you to feed this into that initial discussion. And it's the comment that users use financial statements as a reference document rather than as a novel they read front to back. And understanding that that's how they use it and thinking about what that means in terms of how information is distributed in the document is something I've heard increasing frustration about. I can remember being in one meeting with a group of investors and saying, I'm frustrated that if I want to get information about the maturities of claims against the entity, I have to comb through the entire document. And unless I spend hours doing it, I'm not really sure I have everything all pulled together. So I think even in an era of technology and people looking for electronic retrieval of data, there still is a demand either to have what I think of from a former life as a structured taxonomy that applies or something that acts as an index, even if we want to give a lot of flexibility for the financial statements to be a communication document and portray things the way we want, that there's kind of a standard index that if I say I want to find the information about X, I can go somewhere and be sent directly to X, even if I don't am not required to do it in a standard format. And I think that's important because I've heard complaints that it takes too long to do, so I'm forced to have expensive subscriptions to data service providers that essentially do that, and people feel that they should be able, with the increasing availability of electronic information, to do some of that searching themselves and have confidence in it. And I think it's also an issue about how people approach the notion of presents fairly and, in compliance with the requirements of framework, because right now the approach might be as long as the information is somewhere in the document, I've satisfied the requirement, as opposed to, I have to go hunting really hard to knit together all the pieces. And this will come to a point that's in the next paper, which is about the principles of effective communication. But I think we might want to look at taking what is to me the central learning point of people use financial statements not as something they get and they sit down and they read it front to back, but rather something they get and they put aside until they need it, and then they dip into it to get, whether it's get it electronically or get it physically to extract the information they want. And as the financial statements get longer, they're finding it harder and harder to find what they're looking for, and especially if what they're trying to see is if somebody has any of X, and to be confident that the answer is no. So I agree with the recommendation, but that's just input into that consideration.
Nick?
Thank you. Just to follow up what Mary's going to say, although I have another point as well. I agree, people do want to use the financial statements and the notes as a reference document, and that's why there's some nervousness about digital reporting, is that they won't always know that it's in book, if you like. I think one easy solution, I know it's been talked about at the board before, is to have the notes in a specified order, but we've chosen not to go down that route. I'm quite looking forward to a software provider devising an app so they can put the notes in the order I want them to be in automatically, and that would resolve that issue. But on the broader issue of technology, I think it's right to acknowledge that so many respondents talked about the issue in the paper, and no doubt it does have a role to play in the future of financial reporting, but I'm not convinced it solves the disclosure problem. From everything we've learned already and talked about it, I'm not sure there's a huge role there. So I'm very sympathetic to the penultimate sentence in paragraph 55 in terms of where you write about many of the considerations in the DP, the discussion paper, about what information discloses rather than how it communicates that. So I'd be wary of spending too much time in this area, I'd say.
Yeah, if I could just perhaps comment in response to that, I think that is that is very fair and does reflect other comments we've heard. I would say that the risk for us would be, given that we have had all this feedback, we want to make absolutely sure that it doesn't slip through any nets between broader considerations on technology starting and us moving forward with this project, which is kind of why we think it's important to come back on this in a few months' time, and it may well be that at that point we decide that there is a different place that this should be looked at.
Gary.
Thank you. And I agree with your recommendations, but somewhat skeptical about what can we do between now and June. Because if there's one thing, come back with June, here's our staff recommendations to close it out, I think that's very optimistic given how much time we spend on this and the world does. If it's to come back with what should our work plan be to address it over a period of time, I think it's a different thing. But help us out. What are you, at the moment, thinking you're going to bring back to us in June? Because I don't think you can have final solutions and recommendations.
Well, I'd love to have final solutions and recommendations in June. I agree that will absolutely not be the case. Kind of in line with what I just said, I think we're in an interesting situation in the moment in that we've had all of this feedback on the principles of disclosure specifically, but there is broader technology considerations that are being considered in other project teams and more widely across the organisation, and it isn't possible at this point for us collectively to send that feedback into a different place and it be looked at and dealt with. What I wouldn't want to do is kind of say now that will be dealt with elsewhere and risk it slipping through the net, because it's too early for that to be done. So we're not saying that in June we're going to come back with solutions. We're going to come back with an updated position with a bit more informed feedback and more knowledge about what else is going on. And it may well be that the proposal at that stage is that we need more time. It may be that there is a place for that feedback to be owned. That isn't the principles of disclosure project. We just want to have a marker in place to make sure that we do address the feedback that we've heard.
Yeah, and that's, I think, a reasonable aspiration. But even like what Mary said, even just putting an index in the front of the footnotes, 2 pages long. I mean, most people, I think, these days, you get your something that still looks like an annual report, but you'll probably get it by a link to the corporate's webpage. We can't require people to put hyperlinks all through it, but it's commonly done. There are things you can do to make the current product better, but I think some of it's probably beyond our capabilities to mandate people doing it.
Okay. Can I see who agrees with the staff recommendation? And again, 14.
Okay, then, the final topic in Category 4 and the final topic in Agenda Paper 11A relates to materiality, which is discussed in paragraphs 56 to 60. Now, many respondents thought that if the board were able to help entities apply better materiality judgments, this could be effective in addressing the disclosure problem. However, since issuing the discussion paper and since receiving all of the feedback we've had, the board has undertaken other activities related to materiality, one example of which is developing the materiality practice statement. And we think the board should allow time for the practical effects of those activities to be better understood before deciding whether, in response to this feedback, any additional activity in that area would be helpful. We also, of course, have a separate project on the definition of material, which we will be discussing with the board over the next couple of months. And we have had some relevant feedback in that project about those recent other publications. So question 7 on page 19 asks the board whether it agrees with the staff recommendation to consider whether to perform any further activity relating to the application of materiality when it has more information about the practical effects of those recent publications.
Can I see who supports staff recommendation?
14.
Okay, so we heartily supported all the proposals for not doing something or postponing. Now we're going to see if we can support
action.
You're 98-0 so far. Oh, votes.
Well, we'll see if that continues. So moving on then to agenda paper 11B, which contains staff analysis and recommendations relating to those topics in category 5. Now, this category contains the discussion paper topics that we consider to be of highest priority. These are the areas that relate directly to how the board could help to address the main disclosure problem. In the paper, we've summarised analysis relating to 6 activities that the board could undertake. Now, these activities are not mutually exclusive, so the board could decide to undertake any number of them. However, we talked earlier about the importance of focus and prioritisation, and the staff recommendations in this paper are made with that in mind. Now, almost all respondents to the discussion paper thought the way that the board drafts disclosure requirements contributes to the problem. And unlike some of the other areas discussed in the paper, the board is the only party that can improve the way that disclosure requirements in IFRS standards are developed and drafted. We think that if the board were to undertake activities to improve disclosure requirements in the standards, that would be an important first step in an iterative process to help improve the disclosure problem. So in this paper, we recommend first that the board develops guidance for the board itself to use when developing and drafting disclosure requirements in the future. Paragraph 19 of the paper provides examples of the kinds of things we envisage including in that guidance, subject to detailed analysis and discussion over the next few months. We think developing that kind of guidance will help the board to prepare more coherent and consistent disclosure requirements in future. And we also think that it would not be beneficial to stakeholders if the board were to spend a long time developing that guidance as a formal due process document. We think the guidance should be in a form that the board would be able to update and amend in a timely way as the iterative process that I mentioned earlier develops. So consequently, we're recommending that the guidance be developed as a set of board decisions in the first instance. That said, we do think it's essential to get formal stakeholder feedback, and we would envisage doing that when the guidance is subsequently used as part of future standard setting activities. So the second part of our recommendation is that we recommend the board select 1 or 2 IFRS standards on which to test the guidance that I've just described. Paragraph 68 of the paper describes how we would approach making decisions about which standards to select. Third, we recommend that the board then apply the guidance to the selected standards. And finally, prepare an exposure draft of amendments to the disclosure requirements of those standards. And it is at that point that we would go out for formal stakeholder feedback on all of this. So in summary, our recommendations in this paper essentially constitute a targeted standards level review. Now, one final really important point to note is that we think the objective of this process would not relate directly to the volume of disclosure requirements. In other words, the board would not be specifically aiming to reduce disclosure requirements in the selected standards, and equally it wouldn't be specifically aiming to increase the volume of those requirements. Instead, the objective would be to improve disclosure requirements so that their application would provide more useful information to users than is the case today. And if the board does agree with our recommendations in this paper, we would plan to make that objective clear in the staff update and in all other communications about the targeted standards level review in the interests of managing expectations. So with that summary, I will hand over for discussion of agenda paper 11B.
I generally agree with what you're planning to, what you recommend that we work on and the approach that you propose to take, subject to a couple of things. Firstly, on the standards level review, I agree with the sort of approach that you propose in terms of making it targeted and bringing to us recommendations for which standards we might focus on first. I think that's all good. I think one particular thing that I'll be harping on about, you'll be unsurprised, I'm sure, as we get into this whole process is how we get comfortable with enforceability. of disclosure requirements that are worded in a more objective-based way, and talking to regulators about what they've found difficult to enforce already with some of the places where we talk about information that should be either presented or disclosed if it's relevant. So I'm thinking of some of the stuff in IAS 1 where there perhaps has been less information provided than we might have anticipated, and also some of the work we did on IAS 7 with the restrictions on cash movements around the world and the sort of surprising low level of disclosures relative what we might have anticipated based on the words, and sort of getting behind some of those enforceability issues would be important to me. One thing that you don't recommend that we pursue, which I'm sort of a little bit more on the fence about, I think, is the principles of effective communication. And in particular, what struck me, and I do agree with you that we do have a population that you talk about in paragraph 39 where people have already been able to apply the standards and get to sensible outcomes without this type of document, but I think those people probably also, well, they can already get to sensible outcomes without us rewriting the disclosure requirements as well. Yeah. And what makes me sort of pause a little bit, I don't feel strongly, but makes me pause a little bit, is that when we first went out talking to people about the work we were going to do on the materiality practice statement, at least in the outreach that I did, most people I spoke to said, oh, it's a waste of time because it's obvious, it's not mandatory, all quite negative feedback about, you know, what difference is this going to make. And what's really struck me is that maybe we've done some good marketing, but certainly it seems when I talk to people now that we've actually done that, a lot of positive comments are coming in terms of actually this does make a difference. Now we see this all written down, it really does seem helpful, and it's, I think the sense I get, we'll see, is that it is helping with behavioural change. And so I guess I'm just wondering whether there isn't a sort of subset of our stakeholders who perhaps are some of the less sophisticated ones, or the ones without big teams, the ones that find it harder to have these debates with the auditors and regulators, who may take more confidence, and it might help them to have something which seems obvious to us about good, you know, principles of effective communication. It may really help them feel more confident, help with the behavioural change in the same way that the materiality practice statement has. So I'm a bit disappointed, I guess, that isn't one thing that we're focusing on. But having said that, we can't do everything at once. So I think you've chosen the most important stuff.
Mary?
I'm going to come back to what Sue said and just preface it with a couple of other thoughts. One is, I support the recommendation to develop guidance for the board. I think, you know, we're talking about behavioral change and we've got to be included in that population, and you know, trying to do that makes sense. And I think it also, you know, much as I hate to admit it, I think it probably also makes sense to test that with a standards level case. And the reason I say much as I hate to admit it is I have a lot of concern about thinking we can open up a standard, look only at the disclosure section, and not be drawn into consideration of recognition, measurement, other questions, et cetera. So I think there are a lot of things we can think about how to optimize, and I would say let's start with identifying one to test it. I do agree, though, that it's, roughly speaking, it's develop guidance for the board, test it by looking at a standard. After we get the feedback from how the disclosure requirements are or are not improved for that standard, then go back to the board guidance before we try and get generic input on the board guidance, that kind of cycle. But I think we have to think very carefully about the test case, and I think we just do one. I mean, I think it's, you know, nothing that's not effective or is only in its early days of effectiveness. I think if we have something that we're thinking we have to look at anyway, that trying to revise the disclosure requirements in the context of having reconsidered some aspect of, you know, of the standard would make more sense. I think if we're going to do it just because of disclosures, we should look to see if there are any issues that have been raised with the standard, for example, to the interpretation committee that we should address, because I think one of the good things about IFRS is, for example, when we amend a standard, we look back and say, are there any interpretations that should be incorporated into the standard, rather than just having ever-growing volume of guidance that you have to stitch together when you're answering your question. So I think we should. It's going to be hard to come up with that test case, I think, balancing all those things. And then back to Sue's point, I also was disappointed at the idea that we weren't going to capture the principles of effective communication. I hear the point from your feedback summary that supporting comparability across entities is one that we may have to set aside at this point. But I think the others not only are largely not controversial, but they are statements of what you should be seeking to achieve. So they're both guidance and an objective, or a benchmark to hold something to. And it goes back to that idea of, well, I've satisfied the requirement. It's somewhere in an obscure corner of the financial statements. I have some piece of information that I'm required, to disclose. And I think, your principles of effective communication might give you something to start a discussion around that. Now, I think I'm hopeful that it could be done if all we were to do is take what was in the principles of disclosure and without a lot of amplification and expansion to say this means this, here are a lot of examples, et cetera, if we were to try and capture them and integrate them maybe into an IS-1 type document. So that's a thought about how to do it with a lower effort, if they are, to use the phrase, motherhood and apple pie kind of thing. But I think I would encourage us to look again. And then the last thing to the other things Sue said is about enforceability. I think that's a good work program plan, is to start by thinking about how we can collect information about enforceability of disclosure requirements that are written in a more principles-based fashion, and do we have any feedback? Not a tell me all the things you hate about it, but let's see if there's anything we should know going into this about how we approach guidance for the board and how it drafts the disclosure requirements.
If I could just say one thing which might be helpful to the board's subsequent discussion on principles of effective communication. If we go down that route, and I think you've made a proposal that would potentially make it quite efficient, the one thing that immediately springs to mind that I think we would have to do is have a serious think about enforceability if we were to put those principles straight into IAS-1, for example. That's something that we got a lot of feedback on, so there would be some work to do, but that's not to say we can't do it.
Another question or point to make is the comment period for this document had ended before the publication in October on better communications and the examples of the six companies on principles of effective communication. Do you feel like that document, I don't know, from your outreach, has moved the needle somewhat, that maybe is helpful in progressing the principles of effective communication?
Just because it's exactly the point that I would like to make. I do not agree, as I disagreed in the previous meeting, that we should pursue a standard setting document for principles for effective communication. I don't think this is in our camp. Will be a lot of effort without, and then the enforceability that you mentioned, I think to me is the key aspect. Of course, behavioral thing is associated directly to this. So if we are going to pursue to be helpful, particularly for the population that Sue expressed, I think the only way I see would be a document similar to the one we published last year to present what we saw as examples of better communication. That was my only thinking.
Gary.
Thank you. Catherine, I agree with the recommendations that you've got here. Just a couple of observations I think in terms of doing one or two standards levels of reviews, I think that's probably the right thing to do, but as you start counting back from IFRS 17 back, and we very quickly get back to like IFRS 5 as the newest standard we do, I think as Mary had said, wouldn't be too anxious and going to something that's just going live now or hasn't started. And somehow with the ones we pick to do a standards level review. You know, we're wrapping up a couple of PARs where volume of disclosures was central to it. And likewise, 10, 11, 12, you're coming up. And somehow you'd like to have some sort of a collective working group that sort of maximizes staff efficiency, you know, in them, you know. But recognize you're talking, you know, make a decision later this year or maybe do it quicker. PARs will take longer, but still like to somehow see, you know, and the director being somehow make this work, you know, so the Venn diagrams overlap as much as we can. And then another thing I'm particularly, and it's in, I guess it's paragraph 19A2 about discussing presentation disclosure when we're doing recognition and measurement. And we've talked about that, you know, on and off before. You know, you know, some of these projects, I mean, run 3 years and you're dealing disclosure. You don't even remember the subjects that you talked about. Now, granted, doing piecemeal disclosures of what, if material or relevant, this is what a disclosure would look like, you might end up with a whole lot, much longer list of disclosures. But then at the end, so working disclosures, we could do a holistic look back at the collective volume and say, does it make sense, as opposed to deciding what should be disclosed. So I'm actually really think that would be important for our efficiency. And likewise, you know, to the extent, you know, appreciating you don't necessarily know what decisions the board's going to make, so drafting what the disclosure would look like is a bit tenuous, but you would lead it in with, assuming the board agrees with the staff, we think disclosures would look like this. In it, but I really think we would do ourselves a good service because you start seeing what does the end product look like, you know, as opposed to just debits and credits and recognition and measurement. So somehow I'd like to really work that one into here somehow.
Doc?
Thank you. I support creating guidance for the board, and I also support the everything you've written on the paragraph 19. However, I think one important element is missing. That is, we should create the guidance for the judgment of cost benefit. Because whenever we have a board discussion about cost and benefit, sometimes we say, preparer already have information, so it is not costly. But sometimes, you know, in order to come up with the numbers which can be auditable, then they need to change their system completely. So it's quite difficult to judge whether it's costly or not. And also, sometimes we say this information may be useful. Yes, it's useful for some types of companies. But once it is as a requirement, millions of companies who is complying with IFRS has to create those numbers. So maybe, you know, it is useful for some part of the population, but maybe not really useful for, you know, majority of the companies. So there are many points we need to check before we put it as a requirement. But we don't have any consistent guidance among the board. So every time we make a very specific requirement, but every time we do not. So the judgment of cost benefit is different, you know, different standard may have different criteria. So I think if we were to create the guidance for the board, I think we need to include the guidance for the you know, judgment of cost benefit. That's the one point. The other suggestion is I agree you know, with staff's recommendation to have a test standard to open up some pilot standards. But you say you are not going to tackle the comprehensive standard review because it may take years of years, and I definitely agree with that. However, isn't it not practical to provide some guidance to talk about what the shall means, what the as a minimum means, something like a materiality practice statement. So in every standard, there are requirements that shall or at minimum. But now we have some kind of consensus that we didn't mean this is not requiring you to provide any number, no matter how small the number is. It's not really that requirement. You have to exercise materiality judgment, and you have to exercise whether it's communicating well or not. So if we have such kind of consensus, then we don't really have to revisit every single standard. But if we could provide some good literature, good document, which explains what we mean by shall disclose, what do we mean by at the minimum you need this number, and explain what is the better communication is all about. I think if we could provide such a guidance, which can be combined with our materiality practice statement, and then as a package of better communication, in order to prevent checklist behavior, then I don't think we have to revisit every single standard. So please consider doing such kind of things.
Changbu.
Thank you. I agree with your recommendation, but one more thing we should think about is the principles of effective communication. I agree with all the analysis and all the feedback from our respondents. They are correct. This kind of a repetition of our conceptual frame of quality characteristics. However, we need to monitor the kind of a reaction to the case studies last year we issued. Those case studies are very good means to promote a kind of effective communication from preparers, not on board. So I think we still didn't get any response to that nice document, right? Do you have any reaction to?
No, I mean, we haven't formally looked for feedback on that, and it is, of course, quite a recent publication. So anecdotal feedback, for example, from consultative groups and the advisory council where the topic has come up has been positive, but we haven't got a broad range of feedback at the moment.
So that case study has all kind of principles reflected, or the principles of effective communication and specific examples that those companies are recommended by our national standard setters. So they are very good examples. We don't need any kind of additional educational material. We don't need to develop any kind of principle of effective communication. But these case studies will really help preparers improve their disclosure practice. So I would like to suggest, based that the table of the previous paper, Hans in a praise table, move this the principle effective communication from category 5 to category 4. Monitor some kind of reactions. After that, we can decide on which way we should follow. Maybe a year later.
Françoise.
As many others, I fully support the recommendation that you've made. Just a couple of comments on the standard set and the standard level review. So the choice of standards that we would tackle as part of our pilot exercise. I would recommend that as much as feasible, we work on some standards that include disclosure requirements on which we would have worked anyway, even if we didn't have this project, so that every time we improve the disclosure requirements, we do it because we have identified another need for improving them, not only the fact that we want them to be better articulated. That would be recommended as much as feasible. The other comment that I had not prepared but has been triggered, in fact, by these discussions is around the principles of effective communication. I've been convinced by the argument that including them as requirements in IS1 or equivalent standard would not be enforceable. And for that reason, I have supported your recommendation. Now, eventually, in the work that we do going forward, we may not lose them from sight and see where they could be introduced so that they form a form of aspirational objectives or, you know, in an introduction to the standard, in a place where they provide context and are not seen as requirements. As an enforcer would regard requirements, so that they're not completely lost.
Nick?
Thank you. Yes, I support the overall proposal. It prioritises, I think it's thoughtful, I like the iterative element. It also acknowledges that we have a role to play. But just dwelling on the discussion about effective communication and principles of effective communication, I wonder whether we have to spend more time thinking about what motivates companies to change, actually, because we do have some very good examples out there of companies who are now better communicators with less disclosure than they had before. But I'm not sure it's having a set of principles that has motivated to make that change, but something clearly has allowed them to invest the time and effort to get a longer-term result. And I just wonder whether we need to dwell a little bit more on those motivations, whether it's the role of the enforcement agency or whatever, but something has convinced them that it's worth, often through consultation with investors, to kind of understand what is helpful and what isn't, that they have ended up with a better communication document.
Martin.
Thanks, man. I also agree with the staff recommendation, but I'm not sure if the ordering is right, if we should not start with a kind of a standard and show, or let's look, okay, what is really wrong with the disclosure requirements as a standard, what has driven maybe to disclosure overload, and what has maybe caused that the more relevant information which people, users want to have, are not disclosed. And based on this analysis, then developing kind of guidance for the board, because if I would have to do this work, I find it difficult to come up with guidance for the board, which we did not already know, because I think we are not stupid and develop disclosure. That is our day-to-day work, and that we have now new knowledge about, okay, I don't know what it is, but therefore I think maybe it is more useful if we start with a standard which people think it is a problem and first analyze what has lead to overload, or on the other side, okay, not the relevant information are disclosed, and then based on this information, maybe try to develop some guidance. But I don't know if... And I would do it the other way around. But if we have sufficient, I think, ideas to develop this guidance, maybe we should start as the staff has proposed, but I'm not sure...
The question, have we already done sufficient work in this area to have at least some vague notion about what it is and develop this guidance, and then it's going to be an iterative process.
I think it's not necessarily mutually exclusive. I like the idea of getting some empirical evidence of what's gone wrong with the standards in order to develop...
I feel a little bit that we develop in something and then after we test, that is not really coming to the point. And because based on the feedback we received from this DOP comment, it's okay, people want to go into the details and then say what's wrong and what's working well, and then based on that, okay, give verdicts. But I am not absolutely sure. I said I'm uncertain what is the best way. But if you have good ideas to come up with this guidance, maybe we should start if you proposed. If you are not certain, maybe you think a little bit about maybe you should start with a standard and then develop.
Yeah, just to sort of clarify what we've got in mind, we did, in all the feedback that we've had here, a lot of opinions on the things that people today dislike about the approach to developing and drafting disclosure requirements. So we do have a number of ideas to bring to the table. The way that we'd envisage it working is that we prepare an initial draft of that guidance, and then when we apply it to a couple of test standards, we would fully expect that exercise would lead to that guidance being updated. So we would see it as iterative and not one decision that would not be changed.
Tom?
Two quick comments. One is just on what Martin said, is that, I think the whole point of the iterative is that we should be relying on our knowledge of what we've done in the past. So I think as you, if you start with the guidance, presumably you draw on some of that knowledge because you do your first iteration maybe simultaneously. So I just think I really like the iterative is that we have a lot to learn about developing it and going, you know, one at a time and feeding back. It's good. I have, just want to pick up one thing also that Tak said, and I guess it goes a little bit to the questions in C, right at the end. And Tak was talking about keeping cost-benefit in mind or benefit-cost in mind. And just the way we phrased it, and I was thinking, what's an improvement? So if I kind of think of, I know some people, I think, perceive the way disclosure is done is that if there's anything positive, useful, it goes in without a whole lot of thought about exactly what it costs. I think some people have that perception. And even the way the sentence in C is written, it says, so that applying them provides more useful information to the primary users of financial statements. And I think one way of improving something, if you had some stuff that's really marginally useful and very high cost, one might argue that removing that item is actually an improvement. And so if I kind of try and visualize it, do we kind of look at improvement as being purely on usefulness? Or is there also a cost dimension and there's sort of a frontier that you're going to run kind of where we're doing these trade-offs, I think, that Tak was referring to. And so I like the basic way it's worded, but I think it would be nice if improvement could also kind of look for places where we may have some marginal disclosures that are really costly. And I think that somehow needs to fit into what we do in this guidance.
Mary?
I just want to come back and react, I guess express a little skepticism for the recommendations that Tak made, because to me the idea of developing cost-benefit guidance is not so much how we draft the disclosure requirements, but it feels more like like the kind of thing that the trustees think about in the periodic strategy and effectiveness review, mm-hmm. you know, about what are the valid considerations for us and how do we weigh the needs of users versus the cost imposed directly on preparers. So it's not that I think it's a let's never touch it. I'm just not mm-hmm. sure that this is mm-hmm. the right platform. And in terms of guidance regarding the use of the word shall, I think we had already some comments about that in the basis for conclusion in the December 2014 amendments that we made to IS-1. Mm-hmm. And I think going back further and exploring and expanding that will either force everybody, if it's authoritative guidance, to go back and reconsider every disclosure requirement that, you know, that they've mm-hmm. ever applied, or just kind of confirm the obvious. So I wanted to express some skepticism about those two, although I guess it's things we should keep in the mix of whether that's something that has to be done at some point.
Okay. Well, I think we can vote for the recommendation as a whole. Can I see who supports the staff recommendation?
14.
Slam dunk.
Would it be helpful if I sum up briefly what we are taking away from the meeting?
Yes. Let's start with all the stuff that we're not going to do.
I will keep it brief. So the board have voted for all of the recommendations in the paper. A couple of tweaks we will make when we do the staff update on agenda paper 11A on formatting, in that we will make sure we are clear about the fact that we are not proposing our mandatory guidance on formatting either, and we will take on board and consider the point about considering formatting within each project, albeit not in this context. Other than that, on agenda paper 11A, we had a number of pieces of advice for the, from the board about things we will consider when we bring various papers back, and we will make sure we factor all those things in. On agenda paper 11B, again, we'll take the staff recommendation forward. Again, we've had a few pieces of advice which we will make sure to factor into the papers that we bring back. With regard to the guidance for the board, which will be the first paper coming back, I think the key messages that, that we've got to think about in addition to what we already had in mind is whether to think about cost-benefit considerations, and also when we're thinking about the potential for objectives-based requirements, to think about the enforceability of those kinds of requirements. The other key message that we've heard is that there are a number of board members that are potentially keen on thinking about principles of effective communication in one form or another in future. Just to clarify that our decisions staff update are phrased in a positive light. So we have decided to do the things we've decided to do, and what we will not do is say that we will never look at principles of effective communication. So to reassure the board that that is not closed. Based on what we've heard, I think, you know, we wouldn't put that on the table as the next step now, but we will certainly keep it in mind. And as I said, that, that door is not closed.
Okay, well, congratulations with this resounding success. It reflects the quality of the paper.
Yes.
All right, we continue tomorrow, right?